Gulf of Tonkin.
Jesus.
Ever heard of it?
Dale, are we starting the show? Is this the, have we started?
Oh yeah, Chuck, you're right. I think, Chuck, you, why don't you do it? It's episode 199, just to let you know. You do it. Turn the tables on your ass. He's sweating. He's sweating. He's pulling open his shirt.
Hey, welcome to Bat and Spider. See, if it was up to me, we would just cut right to the meat. We wouldn't, right. Wouldn't do the opening.
Right. Right. Like Conan has no friends. Right.
I don't know. I've
like
never
the big ones.
I've never listened to
the, I've Mark only Maron. The big ones.
Maron.
Maron.
Hey, everybody. No, let's what not the do Maron. What the
lock, lock the gates.
Lock the gates.
This is when it all falls apart.
Bat and Spider 199?
Yep.
We're gonna party like it's 190. We're watching Real Housewives in there. And this Target, this new Target commercial came on. They use this Prince song. We were both just we're grooving.
Really?
Just gets the blood flowing.
How many Prince fans are just, you know, like not like this? Not like,
yeah, I know.
You know, I know. These Prince even
though,
fans.
Even though they're both from Minnesota, right? Target and
that's true.
Prince. Yeah. They're neighbors.
It's probably like this thing where, you know, Sting the musician lets Sting the wrestler use the name for like $1 a year. Prince lets Target use the Prince songs for $1 a year because they're both from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yeah, probably.
I bet you that's what it is. You that's what it is.
Just, it's the neighborly thing.
Everybody from around that way. So nice. Grumpy old men. Grumpier old men.
Oh, God. Classic. Two old coots fighting over a beautiful woman that moves in across the street and installs a sauna in her front yard. It's in her front yard, the sauna. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous right. place for a sauna.
I mean, how are people supposed to not react?
Yeah.
A boob is a boob. You know what I mean?
Holy moly. Did you see that in that movie?
Yes.
Then the penguin comes up and he's like,
gosh, stuff, son.
I want to sliver the old salami. He says stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. When he dies in the second one, Burgess Meredith.
Dude.
God. I'm sorry to even bring it up.
Heartbreaking moments in cinema.
Because it's like because Jack Lemmon knew immediately.
If you're just joining us, this is Bat and Spider 199. This week, Dale picked for us The Cremator, a very, very smart movie. This is probably way above our pay grade, but we're gonna do our best. We're going to give it the old high school dropout try. Try and make sense of this for you.
By cornering one of the smart kids under the bleachers and making him do it for us.
Yeah. 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 I cornered two just to be safe. So I have two reports here on my desk that I can leaf through, you know.
Smart.
Dale, did you go to college? I don't know if I know this. I don't know if I ever asked you about your college education.
I went to community college. I commuted from home to my community college.
All right.
Yeah.
And did you do any other trade school or anything? Was that's where you learned like the computer chops?
That's where I went. That's where I got my computer chops.
Is that what you majored in?
I majored in computer chops.
Fucking major.
No, it was they had like computer associate's degrees. I got the associate's. I went whole hog for the associate's and I got it in like network management it was called, but it was really just like what they teach you in the books that you can pass computer exams with and professional exams. It's like, here's your textbook. And then you take it and run with it.
Man.
It was a good time to be getting into it because it was just that, like, it was just kind of like getting wider in terms of like information technology as becoming super mainstream, but also, you know, like my community college didn't really have like a plan or a syllabus. And they just like, they're like, let's just teach what the books teach, like what the exam prep books teach. And,
yeah,
And, you know, like at that time, it was for very little education, you can break into IT, and that's where we are. This is a serious episode
that's
here.
Great.
But, yeah, so now I'm like, I can't get any higher in my career, and I don't want to, and I don't want this career anymore, but here we are, you know, like now that it's split open. It's like I'm the old white-haired hag in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and I crack open the egg, but it's filled with blood instead. That's what we're doing right here on this podcast is I'm talking about the career that I no longer want, and I slip my long hag fingernail into the eggshell, and I split open the reptilian sort of shell, and blood oozes out into my seethe future bowl. Jesus. And here we are. I'm stuck in a dead-end job where I can't move up, and I don't want to be a manager, and I don't want the career that I'm in, but I can't afford to start over.
Anyone ever tells you radio is not a visual medium, you clip this out and smack them in the face with it.
It would help if anybody who does listen watches Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves first.
The reason I ask is because you picked a Smarty Pants movie this week, and I was, you know, trying to think of bits to run out the clock before we have to talk about it. So I was thinking like, oh, we could talk about how unqualified we are to talk about this movie, and it got me thinking. I don't really know Dale's post. What do you call that? Post. Elementary education, whatever. So I thought I'd ask. Yep. And now I know you're not qualified to talk about this movie.
That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. I was led to believe that this was just a horror movie. I was led to believe it was just a scary movie.
Yeah.
And it's so much more than that, Chuck. We are not equipped. Yeah, we are not prepared.
Yeah. No, this is a great preface, just because it's like, we're over apologizing. It's like when you make dinner, you cook dinner for your family the first time, and you're not confident about it. You bring out the pot and you're just like, look, this is not going to be good. This is, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. This is this is an experiment. I don't know. You know, you preface it, you know, so that when they actually bite into it, they're like, oh, you know what? Not so bad. It's like, you know, warming up with a donut on the bat, you know, before you get up the plate.
All right. Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah. It's, we're going to see how long this episode actually is in the end.
I mean, this intro part, I still feel like you threw this in my lap and I'm floundering, Dale. I mean, how long are we? This is almost 10 minutes of me. I guess I introduced the movie, but this is Bat and Spider. Welcome, everybody.
Friend of the show, Fungi72.
Oh, yeah, that part.
On their review of the Cremade Tour. Bat and Spider doing some heavy lifting this week. Bless you guys. So like right from the Chihuahua's mouth, according to this profile picture. We're in trouble. We're in trouble.
Wow. Wow. Especially since I had to cram this in while faced with two nights of WrestleMania 40.
Beamed
into my home.
So
it was a real like low art, high art fighting for my time. And the low art had what was it, like 12 hours of programming, whatever it was? I don't know. Maybe that's too long.
It's a lot.
I don't know if it needs to be two nights. I really don't. I don't think it needs to be two nights.
Just when they started like, you know, like finally getting their groove in the two night thing. now to preface, Chuck, I am only into about the second match of night two.
Oh my God. Okay. All right. Well then
I started watching it today.
Well, we're limited. Well, I imagine you're already spoiled. The main event.
I think I'm spoiled by the big.
Yeah. I mean,
based on like a tiny, tiny thumbnail, I think, but I've managed.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Well, let's not talk about it, but, other than that, then you watched
shortening the show even further.
Then you watched, at least you watched the main event of night one, where you saw The Rock return to the ring for the first time in a long time. How did that feel?
You know what? It was cool to see the Brahma Bull back in the ring.
The final boss.
That's, but it was cool to see that, but as soon as in the main intro of him, he called himself the final boss.
Yeah, well, I was wondering what you thought of that.
You probably, did you immediately think of me when you heard it?
I thought, no, I thought, I was like, if I was like a kid, would I, if I was like a younger kid, would I think this is a cool name?
Right.
Immediately I was like, ugh, like this sounds like grandpa, you know, naming his wrestling character a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's yes. You're right. And you know what? You got to think of the kids. Cause like maybe the kids, maybe the kids are, would be like through the moon because they're, he's like associating himself with a video game, you know, with a video game, but like, he's the Rock. He already is the final boss, right? He doesn't, you don't need to call yourself the final boss. Yeah, you are the final boss. Like it's given. You're the Rock.
Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking adding a new name. Like maybe they didn't want to sully the Rock name with his heel, with this like over big villain heel name, heel turn, whatever.
Oh yeah.
And maybe that's why they're like, eh, let's call him the final boss. You know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So that's just so he can come back as the Rock after this whole thing that we screwed up.
Is done with. Yeah. Right. Just to bail out Roman Reigns.
This,
right.
This huge mistake we made.
Right. Because his nephew, his cousin, his cousin's nephew is begging him to bail him out to right the ship on the SS WWE.
Wow. But yeah, enjoy the rest of the show. Night 2
was
a lot of fun.
I saw, you know, like, you see Seth Rollins, he's chaining himself to this consummate loser, Cody Rhodes. Like this guy. And then he goes in the second night and he loses his own match to Seth Rollins. Oh,
I know. Seth, I hope he had a Rolex waiting for him. Some sort of bonus, big bonus at the end of these 2 nights. Cause he deserves a vacation. Cause he is just, yeah.
He is. Yeah. Yeah, man. He is flip flopping around. That guy has had it. He had a weekend in Philadelphia.
He's like, all right, I'll be everyone's punching bag this weekend. That's fine. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
You know who, whose punching bag I want to be? I want to be a punching bag, Chuck, for Jade Cargill.
Oh my God, Jade Cargill. Yeah. Were you familiar with her before her current incarnate? She was in AEW for a while.
Yeah, no, I was only, I only became familiar with her during the Rumble. Chuck, they call it the Rumble.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, right then and there, I wanted her to just start punching me in my kidneys until I urinated blood. I want to be for Jade Cargill.
When she came on the screen the Saturday night, I just turned, I'm like, that she's not real.
Right.
She's not real. No. It's incredible. But yeah, I agree. I you know, this WrestleCon thing that happens this weekend, like when it, like that they have during a WrestleMania weekend, I don't know much about it. There's a convention anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But as far as like you wanting Cargill to rough you up, I think that happens at these, cause I started following Thunder Rosa on Instagram. She put up a video of her, I guess it was a wrestling podcast host, and you see him get on stage with her. He lifts up his shirt, you know, to reveal his marshmallowy untoned body. And she gives him a big chop in his chest and the crowd roars. And then there's a close up of the red handprint on
there. Wow.
And that guy,
this guy's living.
That's going to last him all year, that memory. So I think that, I don't know. I'm still new to wrestling. WrestleMania marks my, Melissa and I's 1 year anniversary of being fully involved in professional wrestling.
That's true. Yeah, I remember that. I remember last year like it was yesterday. Last year's discussion. I'm sorry, I'm not more prepared. I tried to cram it all in before.
No. One thing I do want to, I'll spoil this for you because it's not like, it's not like match related, but take note, especially on night 2, they start, the announcers and stuff, they start using the word wrestling in a WWE show, which under old Vince, they stop using that word, which is ridiculous because especially like it's called WrestleMania, but it was like a, you know, it was an edict for, I don't know how long, but they do not use that word, but
whoa,
that old Vince is out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stephanie
McMahon.
You
hear them start to really drop it towards the
Stephanie
end.
Stephanie McMahon declared that, didn't she, at the beginning of night two? It's
oh, did she say Paul Levick
era? Yeah. She said it's the Paul Levick era.
Oh, yeah.
Of WWE, like official.
Kicking dirt in daddy's eye. Yeah.
I know. Just to try to like, please don't think of the poop and the scat in my daddy's office. Poop in the scat.
Oh, yeah. The scat. Yeah. Ugh. Blech. WrestleMania. What else is happening? Dale, Bear Watch. I don't know if you saw this. Pictures are uploaded last night.
Hold on. I gotta find something here. Let me see what I got here for Bear Watch. Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on. This is hard hitting. I'm making Chuck hold here. Bear Watch.
Yes.
We're back.
Bear Watch. Big day, Dale. Bear Watch 24 has now commenced. 2024, not the 24th Bear Watch. Last night, after WrestleMania and before I turn on the cremator, Melissa and I were sitting there and we hear rattling outside. We're like, well, that sounds like the bird feeder being ripped off the tree. Sure enough, our local mama bear and her two cubs, who are now like teenagers. I think we remember these two guys from last year, and they're about half the size they are now. They're still smaller than mom, but they're out there, man. They're just hoovering up. We have like a huge pile of like bird seed on the front lawn, and these guys just with their face to the floor, just like they're anteaters, just sucking it up. Yeah, it was great. It was fantastic. God,
they're living. It's probably their first meal they got after waking up.
Yeah, they're all skinny. And the one was so cute. It was like a dog or a cat. The bird feeder ripped down is like this sort of metal cylinder type thing. And this guy just kept his paw on it. Like he was convinced, I think Melissa said it. He's like, I think he thinks the bird seed is coming out of it still. But he just like, he would like keep his hand on it and then eat up the seeds off the grass. And he would pick it up with him and walk around the yard with it, like in his mouth and stuff. But then things got real, okay, Dale, because Mama, she kept leaving and coming back.
Yeah.
And we even heard some coyotes while they were hoovering up the seeds, but they didn't really care. They listened to the coyotes and then went back to their business. Mom disappears. A few minutes later, she comes back with a big bag of the neighbor's trash in her mouth.
Oh my God.
She brings it across the street into our side yard and proceeds to rip it open.
For the kids.
Yeah. And the kids go crazy. And by then we're like, maybe we should put a stop to this. So we're like, we go out the side door and we're like, hey, quit it. You know, clapping our hands. Right. Mama Bear runs. These kids, they don't care. I don't think they have learned yet that humans are evil because they're just looking at us. They're like, what?
Yeah. What?
I'm eating these dirty diapers here. Leave me alone.
Firmly teenage bears at this point. Yeah. They don't give a crap what you think.
But yeah, that was Bear Watch 24. I wasn't expecting it, but the bears are back. Thank God.
I think that makes everybody listening happy to hear.
Good.
Because we've had a dry spell this winter. I mean, obviously because they're not around. And now we're back. So I mean, are you going to just, did you fill the bird feeder again? Did you get an anti-bear bird feeder at this point?
The bird feeder survived. After they left, I went out and got it and we checked. It was fine. It was a pretty hardy one. I think after they destroyed some other ones we had, Melissa bought her a heavy duty one. Yeah. But yeah, that means probably taking, I think we have to like take it in now at night. Our neighbors have this whole fucking, he's got like this line, like he like from his back deck, he like pulls it up like on this like clothesline thing. This it's ridiculous.
And to keep it out of reach.
Yeah, yeah. So the bears, yeah.
Look at this smarty pants neighbor.
Oh God, he's living his life, you know?
I remember once a couple years ago, friends of ours, they like were like passing through in their camper thing. What are they called?
Winnebago?
Winnebagos, yeah. And they were like, so they had to like park at this local campground. And so we went out there and to meet them and hang out. And there was like, in every campsite, there's like a pole with a hook on it. And they were wondering what the heck it was for because they live like the bougie camp Winnebago life. And I was like, This is like to hang stuff from so the raccoons and stuff don't get to it. And they're busting my balls. Like I'm making up stories about what this, how about it? This matters so much to me that I have to talk about it on my podcast. But they're like,
wait, they were making fun of you?
Yeah. They're like,
like they didn't believe you?
They didn't believe me.
Wow. Wow.
You believe that?
Is Winnebago people. You can't trust them.
I know with their pinkies out and their air conditioning. I was incensed. I was ready to leave after that. I was like, are you kidding me right now? I'm going to get shit for this because I know something about the, you know. So anyway, that's what me and your neighbor friend, we know.
Sick.
I would be so irate when I'm just like, I just take my pants off to crawl in bed and then my wife would be like, you got to go bring the bird feeder in. You got to go pull in the bird feeder. I'm like, God damn it. Let the bears have it. I don't care.
Just let them have it. Let them have their fun.
I'm not going out there. Forget it.
What else is happening? Oh, Dale, today, do you have any eclipse stories? You weren't that close, were you?
I was not that close. I had 80% fulfillment.
That's not so
bad. Yeah, it wasn't bad.
We had 90 and it was okay.
Oh. Yeah, okay. 80% was okay. It was never as cool as I needed it to be at 80%, but we were out there and it was kind of cool because we don't really talk to our neighbors. We're all around, but we went out. I went out there with my glasses and I set up some folding chairs. And then there's my neighbors over there in their driveway. And there's my neighbors over there in their driveway. Nice. We're just like, here we are. We're all hanging out in the driveway. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We kept saying, we don't care about this eclipse, whatever. So then we wake up today and we're like, how are we going to get some of these glasses? You know, we should probably figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
But Melissa ended up asking the local library because she was in there. And they were like, get on the town visitor center today. So around 2:30, we rolled down there and it's very nice. They had a bunch of chairs set up and free snacks. And they had 100 pairs of glasses to give out. So we lucked out, grabbed two. We sat there for a little bit and then we were like, we just want to be alone. So we went back home and sat in the backyard.
Because of everybody talking to you?
Nobody talked to us, but...
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. We just wanted to. Fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was eerie. It didn't get super dark, but it did get a little dark and you could feel the wind, the chill in the air as the sun kind of disappeared. It was fun.
Impressive.
I stared at that fucking thing through those glasses for a long time.
Like something else was going to happen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe at 90%, maybe.
It's over.
I don't know. Chuck, should we talk about the cremator?
Yeah, I guess it's time.
For episode 199?
199, the cremator from 1969. Czechoslovakia, Dale. This movie's about Carol. All right, I don't know how to. I just don't know how to say it. Carol Kopfringkingel.
Perfect.
Look it up. Look it up. Set in the 30s. We're in Prague, and it's about the head of a family who owns a cremation business. Boy, does he love his business. He loves talking about it. He loves telling everyone how great it is. He's really, lately, he's obsessed with Tibet and the idea of reincarnation and how burning up human bodies. You know, it's purifying and it's letting the soul go and it's hastening your chance at afterlife or being reincarnated into something else. But he's a big old nerd who's a blowhard. He loves to hear himself talk, and he's got his family there, wife, two kids, who have to listen to him all day long. But it's 1930s Europe, and the Nazis are on the move, Dale. Hitler's soldiers are encroaching on the borders of Czechoslovakia, so the Nazi fevereism is entering. So he's got a good pal, keeps coming over and being like, "Hey, these Nazis, they know what they're doing." You know, a guy like you, we don't know if you're German or not, but you know, you can just say you got German blood in you, and all of a sudden you find yourself feeling better than everyone else. And you get to go to our secret club where we get to hang out with pretty ladies and talk about how horrible people who aren't us are and how we're going to save the world with our horrible ideas. And you watch Carol kind of, I don't know. He gets sucked into it. I mean, joking about how, you know, this is an artsy movie that we can't talk about, but it the ideas in it are very simple. It's the idea of like how humans easily talk themselves into things, and how ideas that that are probably horrible, you know, how easily one can just kind of fall into it, you know. And I think that's kind of like at the root of what this story is trying to say. So yeah, he gets into this Nazi business. Nail, man, this is a long description.
Hey.
And we'll talk about it, but he becomes an angel of death in a certain sense. Magical movie. I don't think this is a literal movie in the sense that what we're seeing on screen is like, we're supposed to be taking it as a literal representation of the story we're watching. It felt very, but it was acted that way. It was acted like these are just real people, real situations, but it felt like everything was laden with symbolism in that, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I even felt like Carol, like the way he talked in his monologues, that like we weren't really supposed to be taking these like literally like this. It was almost like we were hearing his inner monologue as opposed to him saying all this fucking annoying shit.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? It had yeah, like a that feeling,
because he doesn't stop talking. Like the whole movie is him talking. It really is. Yeah. Like there's very little dialogue from other people, and I am, you know, I am afraid that it's laden with symbolism as well, but there's no denying that it's laden with symbolism, even if we don't maybe understand all of it.
Yeah, sure.
But there's just something about the way from where the movie starts to the end, Carol seems to be like, he starts here with his inner monologue that he's basically at times breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
And he's speaking to us about ideas and his glorification of the crematorium that he works at and he owns, and he's got the good people working for him. And like along the way, it's like he tells us his inner monologue, and then that inner monologue ends up being outwardly spoken to the group of people he's in front of. And then he kind of like soaks up some more information from them. And then he like regurgitates it to us. And then it's like this weird thing where he like there's like point A to point B, there's information like regurgitated from other people that he kind of absorbs and spits it back out like it were his. And then there's like another point C that does it. It's like it hops along from these like pockets of information that he hears and then like regurgitates to either the fourth wall or other people. And it's I mean, it's so frighteningly effective, but, you know, also I don't, other than it being like chilling in this weird way, because it's more weird than anything. I don't know what the intended effects are for. Like, I don't know what the intended symbolism, like, of that kind of stuff is for.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. I mean, the whole movie is just like close-up shots of his face talking to us. The whole, like, the first hour of the movie almost, you don't even know it's like going to be about Nazism, and it's not going to be about the Third Reich infiltrating Czechoslovakia. You don't, like, you just think it's going to be this weird, like, in my head, I'm like, this is just a scary movie. Like, what is it? Like, is he like obsessed with dead bodies? Is he burning people alive? Like, get to the, like, but it takes so long for the movie to unravel the horror of what's happening that you're just like, at a certain point, you're like, I'm just like, what's about to happen here? Like, what's going on? And then you find out, you know, it's horrific, but for completely different reasons, like completely real, you know, reasons, completely frightening in the most realistic way kind of reasons.
Yeah. And it's all, and like the way, the, what he ends up going off to do as the credits roll, it's like, oh, like he somehow, like his life led him into this profession that made him the perfect person to do this inhumane act that he sees as, that he talked himself into being a liber-, he's actually liberating these people from this horrible world. These imperfect people, you know, it's disgusting stuff, you know, that his conclusions he comes to, but in his head, he thinks he's a liberator, and he's uniquely positioned to do this because he was in business as a cremator, and the thought of burning bodies in ovens to him, it's just like blowing your nose, eating a bowl of cereal. It just, it's his job. It's his, it's what he does. It's,
to him, the act of doing it is beautiful. He's not like, he's not biased against any race in particular for the first 6/8 of the movie, 2/3, like, you know, 7/8 of the movie. It just so happens that, you know, somebody gets in his ear and he's like, well, you know, if I can do it to these proud German soldiers, and I can do it to mourning widowed mothers and wives, then I can do it to 100 Jews at a time.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be beautiful for them, just like it's beautiful for the widow or the grandfather, or, and it's like, holy shit.
Yeah. And he's so, like, he's, I love when you talked about him soaking up information and then regurgitating it. Cause it's, there's very much that thing in this movie where his one friend who gets into the Nazism first, like, starts to feed him this stuff about Jews, you know, and he's, but it's done in such a slick way that he doesn't even realize, like, he's being turned into this and being sent as a spy to, like, go to the, it was like some Jewish celebration that his friend was like, oh, your doctor's Jewish. He could probably, we just want to know what they're talking about, you know, just so we can help them. We just want to know what they're saying behind closed doors. So if you could get yourself invited, that'd be great. And it's just, and eventually it leads to, like, him, you know, seeing his Jewish doctor is subhuman by the end of the movie, where in the beginning, you know, it was just his doctor that he went to all the time to make sure he didn't have STDs, because he's having sex with a sex worker every month,
right?
on a perfect schedule, because he's a weirdo. But it's shocking to watch him, you know, and then he, like, how quickly he, you know, oh well, you're. Your wife, I noticed she talked about her mother making jellied fish. So, you know, she probably has some Jewish blood in her. And all of a sudden he's like, yeah, well, okay. I guess she's imperfect. She's got to go. And then his son is effeminate.
Oh my God, he's effeminate son.
So he's next, you know, and of course his daughter, she's got Jewish blood too.
Right.
There's the reason. It's a shocking train wreck to watch.
Yeah.
But holy cow, this, I mean, even if this movie was just about a cremator who had nothing to do with Nazis in World War II,
Yeah.
His character. He is so repulsive, but you cannot take your eyes off of him.
I know.
You want to listen to him say his fucking bullshit. Like,
yeah.
Cause he's so full of himself, and he just thinks, but I think that's what's interesting. He's so full of himself. He's such an authority on his business, and he's the head of his family. Like, he is just top dog in his little world. But when he sees the Nazi over there, who's like, is, you know, his buddy, and he respects, and he's like, I got to be like him, you know?
Yeah.
I better take what he's feeding me and work that into my life. Cause obviously he knows what's, you know, it's how easily he just like becomes this new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Because he's over there, he's commanding the room.
Yeah.
Like, I'm commanding my little family at the dinner table in my house where the bathroom is the nicest room. But he over there, like, he's commanding a room at the club. You know what I mean? And it's like, if there's anything that he wants is to be able to espouse more, because he's the authority on everything, right? Like, he speaks with such confidence about, like, who cares? If he was my friend, but like, who cares? Who cares that you work at a crematorium? Like, just stop it for once. Like, parent your kids. Don't, like, you know, like, don't glorify you work at a crematorium. You like shovel coal. You work at a mortuary. Like, it's like a, you know, it's like a blue collar job. Like, but this dude is so proud of it. It's like, God, take a break, take a breather, and like, talk real to somebody for once, because he's not doing it in this movie. Like, any chance he gets, it's all, and obviously it's all working towards the end goal. Like, so he's already convinced himself of most of what he needs to believe.
Yeah.
He just needs to know he's got to turn the tables on, you know, his family. But like, to be in the room, because he's breaking the fourth wall at times, seemingly, just so he can like even tell us what he's the authority on. And it's amazing to watch this guy, because he's not pretty. He, like, apparently up until before this, he was like solely in like Czech comedy movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. But
this movie is like this whole different thing for him. And this character that he embodies, like, he's so handsy. He's like touching his kids' faces all the time. And
oh, I hated that.
Like, the way he, you know, like, I'm trying to think of a different kind of movie where, you know, he has his wife on a pedestal and he glorifies her, but obviously, like, he almost doesn't believe himself that he goes to see this prostitute or the sex worker once a month.
Yeah, yeah.
But even to her, like, he's probably talking to her more than, like, it's amazing. He can't wait to catch her up on what's going on at work.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, they're both washing their genitals. He will not shut up about cremation. Oh, and I'm just like, dude.
When he is talking about cremation and she just straddles that bidet and like takes that bar of soap to her crotch, it's like,
oh, and she's just like,
this is real.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, just, yeah. Like,
but I'll, she does it with a smile on her face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. When you're describing Carol, I kept thinking, he's Hank Hill with
my God,
talking about propane, you know, just won't shut up about it. Everything. He relates everything to propane, everything in his life.
Yeah.
That's what this guy is, but it's cremation.
Yeah.
There's also like, there's a very otherworldly sensation in this movie, especially that first scene where he's having, I don't know what it is. It's like a gathering at his crematorium place, I think. And there's a small little, very tiny orchestra or whatever playing music. And I guess he's just invited people from the community, and he's going to talk about how important cremation is.
It's like a TED talk.
But that whole scene, I kept thinking to myself, I was like, oh, this movie's this is the afterlife. This guy's already dead, and this is like we're watching his version of heaven or something. Or it ends up being purgatory. Like that's where my mind was going. I was like, oh, this is not literal life. This is like an afterlife situation, or this is a dream or something.
Yeah.
Because it's just so, like, just the close-ups of the ladies eating that cream pastry, whatever that was, just shoving that cream in their mouth. And he kept putting out people's cigars and cigarettes, no smoking. I don't know. What was the reasoning, no smoking?
I don't know.
Because he said there's no smoking in death or something like that. Because he was like alluding to like they were in the afterlife or something. I don't know.
Right. Was it his way of selling coffins or selling?
That's what I don't know.
Prepaid packages, so they don't have his family. So like the family don't have to worry about the expenses when something comes up.
I think it was a big like seminar to sell cremation packages to old people. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
I love
one old lady was like, is somebody going to get me my cream coffin? And I was like, is it supposed to be coffee, but it's coming out as coffin because it's like, this is purgatory or this is like,
coffin.
It was so weird. Yeah. Like she wanted cream in her coffee, but it came out as cream coffin because we're in this, grand hall of death, the temple of death. One of my notes, the very end of my notes is like his, like the crematorium and his duty there was over everything, like it trumped everything in his life. Familial. Yeah. He was like, as much as he was a beloved husband, this duty of his was like an assignment from God. Like he had himself believing that he was like freeing people for the greater good.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because that just like spills into his ego when the Nazis come knocking, right? Like he's going to he is going to be like the head.
He's like the perfect person for them to recruit to what they end up sending him to do at the end of the movie. And there there's something to him like that opening scene of him standing on that pulpit, talking about cremation. There's some like religious, I think, commentary on his character, like, cause he's such like, cause he takes on that role of like the priest or whatever, sitting up there, talking about, but it's cremation, that he's relating to. I don't know that I think there's something there, but that I just want to get that on the record. Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
it gets gruesome. I mean, there's also, it's so, it's hard to describe his relationship with the cremate because it is, he's hands off, but he is also unbothered by it, but he doesn't get his hands dirty. That's the other thing about him. He doesn't do any like the real gross work with the bodies or the burning. But he's also kind of unbothered by it. Except, I mean, I don't know. They do. There's that weird scene where he goes to that like that like wax museum performance, and he is just, oh man, he's living. He's sucking it up.
He is. Yeah,
these reenactments of like serial killers and stuff, and then But my favorite illustration of his character, I think, distills everything, is him pulling out that fucking comb, combing his hair, combing his little kid's hair, but also combing the hair on the corpses in the coffins at his crematorium, combing their dead people's hair and then combing his hair back and forth. It was such a, like he didn't, yeah, I don't know. But I guess that's what it's like. It's probably what it's like if you're like a mortician or whatever. You know, it just becomes, you know, it doesn't spook you anymore.
Yeah. But it's also like, in the beginning of the movie, he might do it to his kid's hair, but then he like, for the most of the movie, you see him do it to corpses and then he does it to his own hair. But it's like everything he's touching with that comb and then to his own head dies. Or is dead.
Yeah.
Like he burns everything he does that to. And it's like, you know, he murders his own family because they're have a drop of Jew blood in them, and that's chilling, you know.
Yeah, like, that was like it's, I mean, you see it coming, like, you know, and the fucking that the thing he uses to kill them, that metal rod that's in the crematorium mm-hmm. basement, like, and I love that's like there the whole movie. Like that one new employee kicks it over. Like, that's when you first see it. It's like,
yeah.
But he just keeps putting it, like, it's just still in this awkward space between a hallway and this bigger room. It's just up against the wall there. Mm-hmm. It's always there in every shot. And it becomes the thing that he just like ends his family with.
And it makes like such a, it makes its presence known, like this loud clang. There's like barely any, like there's barely noise in this movie other than him talking the entire time, right? So it's like this big clang from this metal rod just makes its presence felt and known. Like, you know, it's jarring to hear something like that and to, you know, to hear him like insist that the rod stay there because it's going to help. It could help somebody later on. And
I know.
I mean, geez, like the way he stares at his kids. Mm. You know, he doesn't even have to think about it. He doesn't even have a second thought or like a guilty look on his face when it comes to like killing his family.
He's so sure. Like it makes sense with the type of person he, like, he's just, once he gets a thought into his head that makes sense, he's like, yeah, no, this is how it has to be. I'm helping them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man.
There's another part of like symbolism that maybe could be a thing, Chuck, but you know, when he goes to first visit his, you know, like homely Jew prostitute and he's like using her as a therapist, he's like talking about his job and everything else. And then you get to when he's like in the party and he's going to like this Nazi only club with the blonde prostitutes. Yeah. And you think that he is like confessing and catching up with the prostitute in his room. Like he's using her as therapy, but turns out he's just talking to the Nazi across the hall. Like,
That's right.
So they're having a conversation, but you don't see the other guy that's in the conversation for like minutes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he makes himself known and they're having like this two-way conversation and the prostitute is just there in the room. Like that was something.
Yeah. And the girl, they're all acting like none of like these conversations, like we don't have anything to do with that. We're like a lower life form almost, you know, it's like, these are men. Yeah. They're making decisions about our lives and our world, you know, we can't get involved. Mm-hmm. We're, our station is below that. And it was really, it's really horrible to watch. To like mm-hmm. the way, I mean, it's amazing the way they illustrated that. That was really powerful. Cause that's the one I think where his buddy's like reminding him how effeminate his son is in that scene.
Yeah.
And you see the look on Carol's face. He's like, okay. Because he's like, he's fully on board with the Nazi project by this point. So he's not like,
oh yeah.
Oh man. Okay.
And his son is caught like packing that picture of the boxer in his luggage.
God,
and then the boxer confesses that, he's like, and then because this guy, you know, wants to help me fight Germans or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well you just signed your own death warrant, kid.
Stupid kid.
Yeah.
What was it? One more symbolism thing. This fucking Morticia Adams that keeps popping up in this movie, Dale.
Mm.
No one ever talks about, he doesn't acknowledge her. Well, I think we're seeing that he sees her, but he never, none of his monologues talk about her. What's that, Dale? Is that some sort of, is that just death? Is that?
That's the only way I could take it.
Yeah. The only thing I didn't understand though is it the very end when he's going off as his new job at the concentration camps in mm-hmm. charge of the ovens. We see him get in a car. It's raining outside, and the camera's in the car. But we see this Morticia Adams lady pop up again, and she chases after the car as he's leaving. I don't know. I'm not sure. I know. I get it. I mean, I like it. I responded positively to the imagery.
Yeah.
But what, I didn't. Yeah. But what was that he was leaving behind? I don't know.
Yeah. Like, was it death hovering around him? Was it his death? Was it just death in general? Like, was it chasing her? Was it chasing him, or was it following him, like, to his next job? You know, like that could be. That was all, everything that was going through my mind. If it, like, I took it as like a death thing, and he did seem to acknowledge it at least, or that his, the Tibetan version of him.
Yeah. It's just that, that last scene threw me for a loop as far as what she represented. Cause you'd think it would be like he would be embracing her in some way or something.
Exactly.
We'll let's leave that part up to the viewers. You guys can tell us what that means.
What do you guys think? I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah.
I did think, Chuck, that we were going to be witness to yet another movie with horrible animal violence, but those carp were killed off screen. Thank God.
Thank God. Thank God.
Did you think that we were going to watch carp get malleted in the head on screen?
Yeah, when Anna walked in with her mallet. With that big smile on her face, going into the carps that are sitting in the bathtub. I was like, oh boy, here we go.
Yep. I thought that.
Oh, we had a nice kitty cat in this movie. He had a beloved cat named Enchantress that he loved.
Beauty. Yeah.
Great cat. She likes to love eat the entrails, he said.
God. The sound work on every time that cat licked the bowl, like audible ASMR cat licking sounds for us to love.
Yeah. People in the 30s just feeding their cats milk. Just day old milk.
Yeah.
Give it to the cat. Fire hose of shit.
Yeah, exactly. At what point did people just realize that, you know, cow's milk is bad for cats? Like, but it's always featured. I don't know.
Yeah.
The poor cats, it threw time with IBS.
They just like the way it tastes.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know, there was something enchanting about this movie, and I was, guy had a hold on me big time.
Oh my God.
You know, I loved it it was truly horrifying, but not in the ways I ever expected this movie to be horrifying.
It's extremely watchable for a movie that on paper sounds like it wouldn't be a joyful night at the movies. It was it gets its hooks in you early, and you're just like, all right, I'm in this.
Yep,
this sick world,
sick world.
But yeah, great pick, Dale.
Thank you. Thanks, buddy. It felt good. It was heavy, but we did it.
Do we have any letters or
great question?
Emails?
Great question, Chuck. 315-544-0966. That's the official Bat and Spider hotline. Or batandspiderpod@gmail.com. We have one voicemail this week. I'm downloading it now. Going to try to get it uploaded into Riverside on the fly. I don't want to say that it's been more reliable because I can't give it that much credit yet, but we'll see.
Oh, Dale, while you do this, I always want to plug this stuff in the beginning of the show, but we just, right before we hit record today, I finished editing our latest Ko-fi app, where we, in the Black Dungeon, we were we pulled up a new prisoner, Josh Staples from Forever Midnight. And we talked about this movie, Space Hunter. Wow. I think like you, I was a little embarrassed that I'd never heard of this movie from 1983.
Totally.
It was quite a ride. But now we are
Peter
virgins no more. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's an 83, but Peter Strauss is probably the least known to me, but Ernie Hudson, Molly Ringwald, Michael Ironside in this movie. Josh Stapes, JJ Stapes, Josh Staples brought the heat, and we had a great time talking about this movie. And I'm thankful that this sucker is now in our lives and part of us now.
Yeah. So get on that Ko-fi. Get on that Ko-fi.
Yeah. Get on that Ko-fi and check out Forever Midnight is the show he's on. One of the rares that these guys do it all in person, and the magic is felt because of it.
Yeah.
Imagine if we were in the same room and we were able to look at each other's eyes and like get the timing down right of our comedy, we would probably be the number one comedy podcast.
It could be. Yeah. It might take me a while to adjust to it though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Another, you know, we got nothing but time here. All right. I'm going to try to fire up this voicemail here, Chuck.
Okay.
Hey, this is Mikey P. I'm calling because there's a phone number to this pod that I think is really cool. And probably Dale's paying for this phone number and nobody uses it. Also, nobody wrote in or called in to the last show, which I think was a shame. It was so good.
Yeah.
You guys were on vacation, so we all took off too, all of us fans. You know what sucks about this phone call is that I can't like redo it. Like with recording, I listen back like 100 times and then I record something like 17 times and then send it to you guys. But now this is just live. Like you're going to play this? This is ridiculous. I just wanted to say I'm super excited for Chuck's comic. Here comes Chesley, waiting for a while. I was super excited when the crowdfunder came out. Hope everybody checks it out. I would love to live in a world where I could just finance everybody's stuff that I love, and I would just mass produce stick Chesley stickers all over where I'm move ass. Okay. Somebody almost hit me.
Oh my god.
You know, nobody uses turn signals anymore. I'm driving. The only pleasure I get is listening to the show. Anyway, great show. I love catching up with you guys. I love hearing all the ins and outs of Dale's thighs rubbing against each other and $22 tacos. Please, I'm serious with all my heart. Please keep up this talk. I can't believe we're coming up to 200 episodes.
God, that's good.
Yeah, so what else is going on?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I love you guys. Keep it up. Love you.
Mikey love P. You.
Wow. You know, he's right. It's like performing without a net when you call into the Bat and Spider hotline, you know?
Yeah. It's nerve wracking.
Yeah. I encourage more people to do it that way.
Yeah. Because you got to be on it. Like, you know, it's like warts and all. That's just, maybe that there's a beauty in that, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 It's like freestyle rapping.
Mikey P. Yeah. Exactly like that. Thank you for the voicemail, Mikey P. We do, you know, this phone number is probably the biggest expense this show has. So, you know, the fact that you used it while driving, appreciate it immensely.
And thanks for not getting into an accident.
Yeah. Not on our dime, please. Yeah. Like, thank you for that. And, listen to the movie Mixtape because Mikey P's on that.
Mm.
And it's amazing.
He does all that art. That show art.
He does all that art, that beautiful art. By my count, Chuck, it's time to announce next episode's movie. And that would be episode 200, Chuck.
Yeah. Are we gonna say what it is?
I think we say what it is. And I think maybe we say why it is.
Okay. All right. Go. The floor is yours.
Okay. We did not pre-announce this. It's a big episode. But also, you know, it's an episode where we find ourselves here four years after the fact. And we're going to see where we are.
Yeah.
You know, as co-hosts, we are going for episode 200. We're going to watch, Chuck, Abel Ferrara's The Driller Killer.
Yeah.
Which, if you remember, was episode 1 of Bat and Spider.
Yeah. Episode 1, if you go back and listen to it, it's two very hyper little boys, very excited about recording their first podcast.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a fun, when you told me this idea, I was like, you know what, this is good. This will be like an artist watching, you know, like, oh, draw Wolverine when you're 6 years old, and then when you're 16, and then when you're 26, you know, you kind of see the progression.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be interesting to see our current forms take on the Driller Killer.
Yeah. I agree. Like, and you know what? Admittedly, I'm not going to go back and listen to episode one, but I also know that it was, you know, we had not practiced any episodes before that. We just went in and we started recording a podcast at episode one.
That's right.
Like maybe we did an episode zero, but I don't think so. So episode one, it was just like, you know, Chuck and I were friends, but we were friends like that talked to each other in person and talked in Slack and Discord every other day. Like we've never spoken to each other outside of like seeing each other at Baltimore Comic Con or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, we were all noobs. I was fresh out of,
college,
not fresh out of community college. No, fresh out of not hosting any podcasts, but being on other podcasts that Slim has, like always driven. And we were like stepping into these roles where, you know, we didn't know what the F we were doing.
Yeah. And I'd never done it before.
Yeah.
Very green.
Very green. And I remember, I think we just, you know, if anything, we just described the plot of Driller Killer for the entire episode. So, you know, and I think we've done a good job of getting away from that. And I can't wait to like watch the Driller Killer again.
Yeah, me too. I remember liking it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I remember liking it too.
We've watched them as 200 more movies of varying quality.
Yeah.
In the trash cinema sphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barring today's episode and a few others.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like today's, you know, today's movie was on the Criterion Channel for land's sakes.
But yeah, I think this is a cool idea, Dale. I'm looking forward to, and it's almost a redemption. We can redeem ourselves from, our childhood embarrassment, you know, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like our new number one. It's like Bat and Spider number one all over again. You know? It's not a reboot.
We can just put a link to the episode 200 and.
Yeah. Right. Start here.
Start it.
So, you know what? It's an experiment and it is what it is, but that's what we're doing for episode 200. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. It's our show. We do what we want.
Yeah.
You dummies.
We're going to make you listen to episode one and then listen to episode 200.
Oh God. Oh damn, I'm tired.
Me too. My legs are sweating.
Mm. Oh yeah, it's getting hot over there.
You know? So. Whew. So on that note, I think we're going to leave you ruminating on the fact that Bat and Spider episode 200 is coming and you guys need to prep. You guys need to strap yourselves in and be prepared.
Let's not go crazy here, Dale.
It's just going to be an episode. It's just another episode. Yeah, like what are we? What am I doing? Yeah. You can go to Ko-fi. You can go to Ko-fi page and unlock that new episode that we just talked about with Josh Staples. ko-fi.com/batandspider, and go to batandspider.com and get that sweet Discord invite. Like I mean, I'm just going through the list of new members that joined this week, and it's just like, you know, I can't even read them all. There's so many people.
Oh my God. The paperwork alone.
Yeah.
Sifting through those.
Background checks, you know, that kind of stuff. It's a lot.
The inbox. My cat keeps knocking over the pile of papers in my inbox on my desk. So we'll get to you eventually.
Right. It's probably why you just, I mean, for a cat to upend that pile, I wouldn't want to go through it either.
No. It's a mess. Total mess.
So until episode 200 is here, Chuck, it's been a pleasure. I love you. I love everybody else out there too.
Yeah. I love you too. We'll see you next week. Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.